Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program. Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I don't know why I tell you it's a radio program, like you're watching it on TV. You're not. It's a radio show, so I'll just say the program. Today's Issues on American Family Radio. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. Our website, if you want to check it out, and we archive our shows here, we podcast them. So you just go to AFR.net, and a lot of good stuff there. AFR.net, American Family Radio. We have apps for your smartphones and your other electronic devices like iPads so that you can listen to American Family Radio. Takes you 1 minute to download the app on your iPad or iPhone or your other, whatever the other kind of devices, Androids. So then you can listen to AFR anywhere in the world, clear as a bell on your app on the iPad or the other kind of devices. So there you go. Just wanted to make sure you're aware of that. And the app is free. It doesn't cost anything. And thousands of people are taking advantage of that. What'd you think about what we just talked about with Abe?
Well, I thought it was excellent. And you know, the fact of the matter, Tim, is Christians, when you set this issue aside, I think black and white Christians would be in absolute agreement on a lot of issues. They would say, for example, yeah, we understand that the devil exploits weakness, exploits human weakness, exploits cultural weakness. You throw the issue of race in, and then people begin to disagree. I guess because their life experiences or they view the world differently. But the devil is still exploiting issues like bitterness and unforgiveness and anger and hatred and yes, racism and all those things. The devil's exploiting it. We need to recognize that and not be ignorant of his schemes. And as Abe pointed out, we had Abe Hamilton, who's our public policy analyst and assistant counsel here at American Family Association and AFR. As he pointed out, this is an issue where the church should lead. We should be leaders on this, be peacemakers. It was a great point about being a peacemaker.
I think we are.
Well,
in a lot of respects.
I think
back to the Promise Keepers movement, there's a lot of emphasis, at least in the evangelical Christian circles, on racial reconciliation for more than a decade.
I would say just from people that I have spoken with in far too many churches, black ministers focus on this rather than trying to
focus
bring—
on what?
Well, on the racial divide. And you have then you have the leaders, the public leaders like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, who are both ministers, who are stirring up trouble rather than trying to solve very real problems that may exist. So what I'm saying is my hope is that in both black churches and white churches, we are not ignoring problems, but we are pointing to biblical solutions to those problems.
Yeah. Well, a couple of facts of life that we're going to have to get used to, I think. I don't know how you solve this problem because it's going to be persistent based on the demographics, as I said. You're going to have stories in the news every week or every couple of weeks about police in confrontation with young black males. And there's going to be death involved.
Well, there's a new one. Well, yeah, I pointed out, I looked, Minnesota cop fatally shoots black man during traffic stop.
Here's a reason for
that. Brand new.
Here's a reason for that. You have, as we documented early, an extraordinarily high percentage of, pardon me, let's see. I don't know what you do with a sneeze on live national radio. I did the best
mid-sentence.
I did the best I could right there. I tried to get away from the microphone, thus the silence. But you're going to have, you know, the more confrontations you have between young black males and police, obviously some of them aren't going to end well. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So if you have police officers day after day after day, and you have a high crime in the demographic I've just announced which we've already told is extraordinarily high, given their numbers. I'm talking about young black males, okay?
Right.
And I don't mean this. I'm just telling the truth. These are the statistical facts of the matter. So the more confrontations you're going to have, you see what I'm saying?
Right.
The more chances you're going to have of something going awry. So that's why you're going to continue to see these stories every week or so. And they make great news because the media wants to make it a racial situation. So that's going to happen. But the net effect of this, I think, is going to be harmful for society at large. And here's why. If you're like what's happened in Baltimore as a test case, you've seen crime skyrocket, right?
That's right.
Well, the cops don't want to confront black males anymore. Who can blame them? Their life will be over. So you see, you just hope and pray it's a white guy you're pulling over at 1 o'clock in the morning driving in a neighborhood he shouldn't be. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Because if it's a black fella, you're thinking in your mind, this could go bad. I'm just going to keep driving. Okay? All right.
Yeah. In other words, cops are human like everybody else.
Sure they are.
Right. They want to avoid
their life being over.
Right.
Okay? Now, probably a lot of them are probably going to get out of the police profession eventually if they can anyway.
Well, Dallas just had a 48 in 1 month.
Get out?
Dallas City. 48 officers left.
They took
jobs in smaller communities
right.
in suburbs.
Well, who you blame them?
Well, 48 in one month.
They're probably taking a pay cut, too.
Even the police chief said
they know.
No, they were actually getting paid more money.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
In Dallas.
They were getting paid more money to go to
I didn't know that.
Suburbia.
That's surprising.
Well, higher tax
base.
Oh,
I see what you're saying. Suburban cities.
Right.
But it's more white than black.
Well, and I'm just saying it's probably less crime. So, in other words, high conflict.
Right.
They don't get paid as much, more stress. You do have probably more confrontations, can end badly. And the stress, and they're just going, look, I'm taking a job, in North Dallas somewhere.
That's happening all over the country.
Right.
Okay, back to my net effect. Okay, who are you replacing those people with? Young, inexperienced officers. Am I right? Would that be natural?
Yeah. In fact, in Louisiana, in the Louisiana case, I think that the officers had been in the department for 2 or 3 years. That's it. They were young. They weren't rookies, but they were.
I'm saying there's guys who are veterans who've been around 10, 20, 30 years who are getting out of the.
Right.
They're being replaced by younger people, probably with less experience. And I'm saying that's not good. Especially in these big city situations,
right.
Where that's one thing. The other thing is, to the net effect, is that we're all going to be less safe, like in Baltimore, because a lot of the police work, as I understand it, is surveillance, like with Freddie Gray in Baltimore. He had 15 drug charges, and he was back out on the street again. Okay, so the cops know who he is, right?
Right.
They know he's a drug dealer. All right. Now, if you're seems to me the human reaction would be, especially if you're talking about a young black male, and I'm a white, especially if I'm a white officer. Well, now in Baltimore, we see it was black officers involved. I would say, I'm not going to go over there and question this known drug dealer, because if something goes bad and he defies my, let me see what's in your pockets. And he says, I ain't letting you see anything.
And then there's a
tussle.
And
then you say, okay, no, yes, you are. And he says, no, I'm not. And then you get into it. Then what do you do? Well, you say, well, I'm going to put you in timeout, young man.
Yeah.
I'm being sorry. You see what
right,
I'm saying?
Right.
So there you have a confrontation. I'm giving you a prime example of what can
Chances
happen.
Chances are other people are gathering around.
Other people, they got their cell phones out.
Right.
So now what's the cop is in a situation where he's told the man what to do. He's a known drug dealer, so there's probable cause for what's about to happen. You may suspect he has cocaine in his pocket. Well, that would have prevented that sale of that dope. I'm just giving you an example of what happens.
Right.
But instead, the cop says, you know what? I'm not going to go over there and confront that guy or see what he's doing. I'm going to keep walking.
Turn a blind eye.
Okay, what does that lead to? That leads to more drugs, more crime, more violence, because the bad guys know the cops are neutered.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've self-neutered, or they're fighting with one hand behind their back because they don't want their life ruined, like what happened with Darren Wilson.
Right.
In St. Louis, yep, or in Ferguson, hands up, don't shoot, never even happened. But that's what America knows.
Yeah.
So this guy, Darren Wilson, this cop, his life's over.
Right.
Okay.
He was a young guy in his 30s.
His life is over. And all he did was the prevent Michael Brown from killing him, evidently by the fact that the gun was, his fingerprints were on there. Michael Brown and him got into a confrontation by the cop, the door. He was not gunned down like an animal in the back, like the young man said he was,
right,
who was with him. You remember him saying that? That stirred up everybody.
Right.
And the story wasn't even true.
Right.
So anyway, the net effect's not good for any of us, because it's going to make black neighborhoods less safe.
Right. Because
the cops aren't going to even want to go in there unless they get a 911 call.
Right.
You know, saying, Jan told us that you took several 911 calls to get a response in Minnesota.
Yeah, with
in
the
Minnesota.
Somalian gangs up there in Minneapolis, St.
Paul.
You can see.
So anyway, there you go. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I guess, you know, Abe said it best. We need to pray for the Christians need to see things with spiritual eyes, and we need to pray for our country and our leaders, because it doesn't look like these things are going to go away.
Right.
Anytime soon, and we don't want to have a race war in our country.
Right.
So that would be horrible. Well, I was in New York at the Donald Trump meeting with Christian leaders 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, whenever that was. Sitting over a table from me was Kirk Cameron, and Kirk was listening and watching intently as Donald Trump answered questions and was interviewed by Mike Huckabee. So I thought, well, we'll ask Kirk what he thought about this meeting and what he thinks about Donald Trump and the election. And so he's on the phone with us from SoCal. How you doing, Kirk?
Hey, Tim, I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. Ed's with me here today.
Hey, great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me on the program.
So who invited you to the meeting in New York?
Well, I heard about the meeting, that it was going to be held real early on, and I contacted Family Research Council, Tony Perkins, and Tony said, yep, I'd love for you to come, love for you to be there. And so he invited me, and I brought my pastor with me.
Great. So what did you think about it?
I was very thankful that I went. I thought it was a really important meeting, as I know you did. It was so good to be, I think most of all, aside from the privilege it was to be there in the room and listen to the answers to important questions from the man who may be our new president, it was such a privilege to be in a room with so many people from different Christian backgrounds. We had people representing different denominations, different socioeconomic categories. We had pastors, lay people, ministry leaders. We had men, we had women, we had young and old, and everyone there expressing their concerns about foreign policy, about domestic policy, about religious freedoms, about Israel, about immigration, all those kinds of things. And to see the church coming together and linking arms was so inspiring to me.
Yeah.
To see the whole crowd of 1,000 people on their knees praying to God was just what we need at this time in our country's history.
And that was prior to, we had a time of worship and prayer. Franklin Graham led in prayer. We had some worship among the 1,000 people who were there prior to really getting into the Q&A with Donald Trump. I think that's kind of what you're talking about, right?
Yes, it was.
Right.
Mean, we understand, Tim, and I know you understand this, and you always you proclaim this so clearly through your radio programs and other platforms that, listen, our founding fathers knew something very, very important. And what they set up in our republic is so unique in the history of the world. They very specifically created a government structure that does not give one person tremendous amounts of power over and against the power of all the people. So today we look for, you know, I mean, just like Israel wanted a king, I think even in America today, people are looking for who's going to get us out of the mess. What? Who's going to be our king? Is it going to be Hillary? Is it going to be Bernie? Is it going to be Cruz? Is it going to be Trump? And what we have to understand, and I think that room understood, is that no, one person cannot do any of those things, even if it were Tim Wildman. Because
I'd come close, though. You,
in such a way,
I would come close, probably.
Probably come close.
Yeah.
Our government's structured in such a way that it's we the people who must keep
right.
the ship on course. And to see everyone there praying on their knees was the beginning of the solution.
Amen.
Coming together as one, crying out to God for wisdom, repentance, and guidance for the future. So that's what I love. That's what was so important about that event.
Do you think, got a couple more questions for you, since I was there and you were there, I want to know your impressions. Do you think this meeting was set up by Ben Carson, I understand, Dr. Ben Carson. Do you think Donald Trump was, he was in a room with most people, most of those people in that room did not vote for him. They were not supporters of his.
In the primaries.
And he knew that. First time I've ever seen him fold his arms while he's taking questions. Talked about body language. Now, I would say he was pretty relaxed, but he was, and I don't see Donald Trump a lot, but most time I see him behind a podium, but he was in an audience that, he knew and they knew were not necessarily synced, okay?
Right.
But how did you think he handled himself, and why do you think he did this kind of a Q&A? He knew the questions ahead of time, which I personally don't have a problem with because I want somebody to be able to think through their answers.
Right.
Especially something as important as the presidential election. And he didn't give all five-star answers for that group. I mean, but he did give some good answers that were in agreement with the group. What do you think about the reason he did that?
The reason that he folded his arms or
no,
he did the meeting in general?
The reason he did the meeting in general.
Well, I mean, from my perspective, I'm thinking that there were probably a couple of reasons, not the least of which is that he needs the evangelical Christian vote in order to win. And so to have a meeting like that is a smart and strategic thing to do if you can win that crowd over, and there was a lot of influencers there, including yourself. So I think that's one of the reasons.
That's a good reason. If you're running for president, that's a good reason. You want, you know, presidential candidates meet with all kinds of groups and constituencies. They need, and he understands, I think you're right, that there's a huge voting block of conservative Christians out there who are skeptical of him, and he wanted to try to connect with them. So,
And I think we know just from the statistics that he needs the evangelical
right.
Christian vote in order to beat Hillary.
Right.
He needs that vote. And so I think it's clearly one of the reasons that he was there. But, you know, I'm not a political pundit. I'm a Christian, and I believe and look at the world from a providential perspective. And I see that God causes nations to rise, and he brings them down and causes them to fall. And when I step back and look at this from a providential perspective, I think all of us, as those of us who are God-loving, God-fearing Christians who stand on the Word of God, we look at this and we say, oh my goodness, we have gotten ourselves in a fix as a nation. Look what our options are for the leader of our country. Mike Huckabee started the meeting out with the assurance to Trump that he wouldn't have to answer a Bible quiz. You know, in essence, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, Trump, we're
right.
not here to grill you. We're not going to ask you, you know, tough questions about the Bible expecting you to answer them. We just want you to know our heart, and we want you to know where we're coming from, and tell us from your heart, what are your intentions? What will you do if we vote for you? And, I look at this and say, God is sending a clear message to us as the church. We've messed up, frankly. We have taken our hands off the wheel and have been derelict in our duty as a church to remain in leadership and to encourage and inspire and equip our young people to rise up and fulfill those positions of leadership in the civic arena. And so now we have Donald Trump, who's a successful businessman, but does not represent most of the moral and spiritual values that you and I would say are essential. Or we've got someone like Hillary, who
you don't need to say anything else. Just say her name. That's all you need to
know.
Yeah,
I know.
No commentary needed.
And so here we have a great wake up call. And the way that I look at it, when it comes down to voting, is I say, you know what? I did not get the sense that Trump understood everything that is essential and necessary for our nation to thrive and be great. But I didn't get the sense that he was against those who do. I didn't get the sense that he was an enemy of the people in the room. I think there are clearly enemies of Christian principles and Christianity. I don't think Trump is one of them. I could be wrong, but I didn't get the sense that he was one of them. And I get the sense, like you said, Tim, in your newsletter after the event, that it seems that he's coachable. It seems that he was appreciative of people not grilling him and looking for gotcha questions, and were saying to him, we love God, we love our country, we want to have the freedom to get back to work and repair what we have let go down on our watch. Will you provide the protection of religious liberty to give us opportunity as the church to course correct our nation? And he seemed friendly toward that idea.
Yeah, he did. He did.
That, I think, is a better option than someone who is unfriendly to that idea and would like to shut the church down.
That's a very good point. Sometimes in voting, you have to consider who's going to do less harm. There's nothing wrong with asking that question. Some people say, I'm not going to.
Because there's a big difference between leaving the church alone and protecting religious liberty and going after it. There's a huge difference between those two positions.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to consider these things. It sounds so sanctimonious and so holy to say, I shall not consider the lesser of two evils.
Right.
I will just not vote. And therefore, I'll be pure.
Can I jump in with you on that?
Go ahead.
You know, Dennis Prager, who is not a Christian, but is appreciated by many Christians, as he appreciates many Christians, said in an article that he wrote, which I thought was very insightful, he said, you know, I just don't understand my conservative friends who say, I'm not going to vote for Trump based on moral reasons. I'm going to take the moral road here and not vote for Trump. And what he said was very interesting. He said, if what you're saying is you're not going to vote for Trump and that in some way makes it easier for Hillary to get into office, then tell me how that is the more moral choice. Because what she will do is remove all of the religious liberty in the nation. She will continue aborting babies.
Mm-hmm.
She will continue to redefine basic family institutions. And this will result in tyranny in our nation.
How is that a good thing?
You're being more moral in your choice.
Let's talk about this. This is very good. Maybe get you back on. I want to continue down this road. And believe me, folks, we do believe character matters and morals matter and all those things.
Of course.
And as I've said in the past, if it's a church setting, we can demand doctrinal purity. In a general American election where you're talking about a CEO, the choices aren't always that clear. And so we have to live in the world as it is rather than the world as we would like it to be oftentimes. Kirk, thanks so much, my friend. We appreciate it.
Well, God bless you guys. Keep up the good work.
We are out of time for this program. We'll see you next time, folks. Have a great day.